Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Wednesday. That means the most experienced political reporters and editors in South Dakota are on deck to help us make sense of the state's political headlines of the week. This week, we welcome John Hunter. He is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for the invitation.
We're also joined by Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks for being here as well.
Glad to be here, Lori.
Let's start with Senator, former U.S. Senator Larry Pressler, and he has endorsed Hillary Clinton. Roger, do you want to talk about whether that's a big surprise or not?
Well, he seemed to think it was a surprise. He made some comments, woke up this morning, had to ask my wife if I really did that. But, you know, he always was a moderate Republican, which these days is almost a contradiction of terms. There's, as the both parties kind of get more separated, moderate people are really not in the picture anymore. But I think facing the choice of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, he felt that he had to go with Hillary Clinton, especially given the Orlando shooting recently. Larry Pressler has come out for more gun control lately, and this was just, I think, something that tipped the scale over to Hillary Clinton's favor.
John, talk a little bit about how Orlando played in this with some political implications there.
Well, I think clearly Larry believed that was an issue, and he, as Roger indicated, has talked about gun control before as an issue. So there are a lot of different opinions on how controlling guns or loosening that would affect the possibility of tragedies like this, but I think a telling statement was that he said he implies that Republicans are saying gun control shouldn't even be discussed. So I think that was a telling statement by Larry. And but that's an issue that will be hard to solve, and it certainly would be difficult to do following a tragedy like this.
John, is that accurate? Are Republicans saying nationwide that gun control should not be discussed?
Well, the idea of bringing up controls are always in the, you know, the initiative is always to have more control. And so there's never initiatives that say less control. So it's a defensive position for Republicans. And so instead of saying, let's always playing defense, let's say let's just not play at all. So that would be indicating the status quo.
Interesting. Roger, let's switch over to Attorney General Marty Jackley. And we're not really switching over because we're still talking about the political impact of the mass shooting in Orlando. And South Dakota and a group of other states continue forward with a legal challenge to the Obama administration's guidance on transgender bathroom policies. What has Jackley said about this right now?
Well, there was some question whether or not they would go ahead with this bill, given the shooting at the gay club in Orlando. But I personally, I thought that was a bit of a stretch. I'm not surprised that the states are going to go ahead and challenge this executive action. They're just saying that it was an overreach by the federal government, that it's not something the federal government should be telling states to do. States can't really prepare to do this in the time frame that the federal government says. So I don't think there was a big surprise that they're going ahead with this. I know when the governor vetoed it, there was some backlash among Republicans in South Dakota, and when the state lawmaker who actually brought the bill forward decided not to fight Dugard's veto on it, that there was, he took a lot of heat on that for not standing up to the veto. So I think Jackley decided to go ahead for it. You know, he has higher political aspirations too, and I think reading the mood of the state, he thinks that it's right to go ahead with the lawsuit.
John, Attorney General Jackley, they paused for a moment, though, in their efforts and said that was out of sensitivity for what had happened in Orlando. Are we over-politicizing this whole Orlando mass shooting when it comes to how we handle legislation in South Dakota?
Well, possibly. There are, you know, the political sensitivity is growing all the time on all issues, it seems, as though that in one sense that's good because people are sensitive to all sorts of issues as they approach politics. On the other hand, I think if you try to go too far with tying things together, you know, this lawsuit really is not a question of can we prevent tragedies like the Orlando kind of thing, but the question is, does a U.S. president have the authority to tell a school district how to use their bathrooms? So those are kind of two different issues, and I recognize how passionate people are on both sides of this thing and how they can be very angry if anyone talks about anything in these things, but that is the question, is there legal authority to do that? And we don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out, I think, through this process. But also remembering that as schools have become reliant on both federal and state funding, that they are essentially turning over some of the decision-making authority to those entities. And so if the federal government says, look, this is just guidance, but guess what? If you don't use our guidance on this, then you're not going to get money from the federal government. Then local school boards are losing control of that. We saw that in South Dakota when funding shifted from a small portion from the state to more than half. That local school boards again shifted that over to the state. So I think ultimately this lawsuit will help determine what the authority that the president has, or the Department of Education in this case, and we'll find out.
Roger, as we talk about having difficult conversations, there's something going on with homecoming in Watertown, and that has been a conversation that's sometimes hard to approach in as it affects the Native American community and students of all races. Do you want to kind of give us a background of the Watertown Homecoming celebration and then update us on where it's at this year?
Sure. I'm sure most people have heard about it. It's been in the news a lot the last few years. Watertown has a really unique homecoming event called the Legend, where the legend of how Watertown High School students came to be. The story is that there were two Native American tribes fighting for land on the shores of Lake Compesca, which is a beautiful lake right outside of town. And after years of warring, they decided that the best thing to do would be to come together as one and live in peace. And they did, and supposedly Watertown High School's students are descendants of this peaceful tribe. Well, when I went to high school in the 70s, and when this legend was written, you know, back in the 30s, nobody really had any problem with it, but lately, with all of our, sensitivity to Native American issues and things like that, it has become an issue, and the school has taken a lot of criticism about it for the last couple of years, and so they decided to modernize it. They have still kept the legend; they've just kind of removed all the Native American imagery and Native American references to it. To kind of make it more acceptable to people and yet have something unique to Watertown that the students can be proud of. And they just did this a couple days ago, and it is being met with with some venom from people who don't like the change and think we're caving into political correctness. So that's where it sits right now.
Where are those voices coming from? Are they coming from alumni of the school? Is it coming from... Outsiders?
No, in fact, the students were, I think, were for the change because we've been hearing that some of the homecoming royalty didn't want to dress up in the Native American garb that they put them in. Some students were actually scared to come to school during homecoming week, and you know that's not really what homecoming should be about. The backlash is coming from, of course, where backlash comes from these days, social media. People feel free to sit in their homes and be as venomous as they want. Very harsh criticism coming down, which is too bad because the school is trying to do the right thing for the students.
John, do you want to talk a little bit about how we have these sort of challenging conversations and have them vigorously and yet respectfully?
Yes, I'd love to. I wish I knew more answers. but yes, I do believe there is a challenge in America right now that free speech is being challenged, and so it deeply concerns me, both freedom of speech and freedom of the press and so forth, that people should be able to speak freely about a topic and should be allowed to do that even if others believe that they're wrong. And there's a real challenge in American universities right now that free speech is not being allowed. People should be able to do that. I think it's been a hallmark of our democracy. And yes, people can disagree, but it shouldn't be the topic shouldn't be about a person's right to an opinion, even if other people think it's wrong. Right? I mean, it's not surprising that not every topic is thought unanimously on one side. That there would be discussion on both sides, and with no fear of being attacked physically or libelous or scandalous. Any of that people should be able to speak freely about topics without fear.
When we talk about freedom of the press, that brings to mind Donald Trump's. He's revoked the press credentials of the Washington Post. Roger, do you want to put that in context as far as what does it mean to have, what does that mean for the Washington Post reporters, and then what does it mean for the rest of us and for journalism right now in America?
Well, the Washington Post said it's not going to really change anything from their perspective. They're still going to cover the Trump campaign. They just won't be in the same room with him. But you know, in today's world, everything he says is known by everybody. So they're promising that they're still going to cover him the same way, and nothing is going to change as far as that. On a bigger scale, I think it's a little frightening. If you think about if Donald Trump gets elected to the White House and he starts banning reporters from his press conferences, or if the entire press corps turns on him, he stops having press conferences altogether. I mean, press conferences for the past 100 years have been the way that the American people learn what the government is doing, and if that becomes endangered, I think it's going to be a huge problem for the American people.
John, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that's it's a natural outgrowth of what's been happening lately, and that is if a candidate is not covered the way they want it to, that they scream unfairness and so forth. But there's clearly in America there's a role for a free press, and it shouldn't. And frankly, it's in the Constitution that Congress shall make no law abridging that right. But Donald Trump would much rather manipulate the message rather than have it being reported. So every time that he says something and then it's reported, he'll say that it was unfairly reported, even though everyone was there to hear it. Or that if he's losing a court case, it's because the judge is of a certain dissent. Those are kind of bully-type criticisms that I think American voters will be able to make that choice, whether they want that or not. They can go either way with that. If they think that's okay to exclude an impartial observer, then that's up to the American voters.
Has anything like this to this scale happened before with a presumptive presidential nominee really taking on the press to the level that Donald Trump does? Roger, do you recall anything that sort of reached this level of dispute?
Boy, not right offhand. This is, but then again, there's been a lot of things happening in this presidential campaign that I've never seen before.
John, are we truly in uncharted territory, or do we just
saying that? No, I don't think so at all. I think candidates have been critical of the press for a very long time, and and Roger and I are very young people, of course, but we remember.
Me too.
Yeah, and Lori, thank you. Richard Nixon. Remember when he famously lost, saying, you guys won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. So, you go way back, and in some cases, the press was a lot less fair to remember the political cartoons of 100 years ago,
sure.
Where you'd see some kind of venomous snake, and then you'd put the candidate's head on top of the cartoon of the snake, and there were all sorts of things that went with that. So, no, I think it's been a sparring back and forth all the time, and But I think probably, you know, since Watergate and Woodward and Bernstein, that relationship has changed a little bit. Nevertheless, I think candidates like to criticize someone else if they're being criticized, and that's what Trump is, one of the things Trump is doing.
Let's finish up today talking about IHS and the IHS Accountability Act of 2016. Senator John Thune out in Rapid City with Senator Mike Rounds and Representative Kristi Noem. Roger, do you want to give us an update as far as what are people going to hear if they go to that town hall, and what sort of topics are being discussed?
Well, Thune recently, along with another senator, introduced a comprehensive bill to reform the Indian Health Services. I'm sure he will be talking about that a lot. He very detailed measure that he has where they will give the Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services more power, direct power to influence IHS, requiring consultation with tribes for things that IHS does, things like that. So I think this conversation has been going on for a while, and all three of our representatives are on board with it. There's been a lot of talk lately. Everybody's calling for action. Everybody seems to be on the same page on this, which is, you know, unusual for an issue these days in politics, that where everyone agrees that something has to be done. So I think this might be the time when we actually see good things happen with Indian Health Services.
John, do you think you're optimistic as well that people being on the same page could move the situation forward and solve the problem or begin to?
I think Roger's spot on with that analysis. And frankly, the bill that Senator Thune and introduced really is all a step in the right direction. And I think the IHS really can be fixed. I think it's possible. I think actually the Veterans Affairs medical thing can be fixed also, much bigger, much harder. But I think the IHS has the possibility of being fixed. And this bill is, I think, a good step forward. I hope people stay with it as it fades from the headlines. That's natural to see these closures for emergency rooms and so forth, call to action, a lot of hemming and hawing, introduce legislation, then we move on to the next crisis. So I hope they stay with us and are able to improve that thing and fix it to where the treaties require.
John Hunter said Roger Whittle is on point with his analysis. Of course, as usual, right? As is John Hunter, that's why we always have you back. John Hunter is a publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Lori.
Roger Whittle, editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks for being here as well.
My pleasure.